Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. It's Hanukkah, guys, which means we are talking two of my favorite foods, brisket and latkes. First up, BA Food Director Carla Lally Music sits down with me to talk about brisket and how to transform that big, tough cut of meat into something tender and lush and delicious. We got one recipe from my mom, Maxine Rappaport, and another that's oddly similar, but a little bit more new school, from the Jewish deli Mamala's up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then Chef Missy Robbins from Lilia, an Italian restaurant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, comes by to talk latkes. Missy and I went head-to-head in a Facebook Live latke cook-off last week. And you can find both of these latke recipes on bonappetit.com. A quick reminder before we get started. Last week, I talked about the charity campaign we began along with Cherry Bomb, Food & Wine, Cooking Light, and Sever. We are asking our readers, users, and fans, and you guys, our listeners, to host dinner parties during the holiday season. And when guests ask, like, hey, what can I bring, a bottle of wine? You say no, but you can donate to a designated charity that we're all given to at this particular dinner party. We've got a website called cookgathergive.com where you can get more information and suggested charities that particularly are focusing a lot on disaster relief this year. So you can host your dinner party, post photos of your meal on social media with the hashtag cookgathergive, and email us photos too at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com and we will repost them. But right now, let's talk brisket with Carla Lally Music. I don't know if there's anything I like more in life than brisket.
Really?
I mean,
good brisket.
Well, yes.
Right.
Like my mom makes. In terms of things I can't stop eating at the table, I would say big giant pile of golden crispy French fries of the kind of the thin variety is one, and 1A is Maxine Rappaport's brisket.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
What if you had them both at the same meal? That would be incredible.
That's literally where you got to lie down after the meal and unbutton your pants on the living room floor and just like lie there for a while.
But if you had brisket on the same night as latkes, then that's kind of like having brisket and French fries together.
Well, that's just, so that's what happens at Maxine's house for Hanukkah, and it's a problem.
But you don't have them at the same course.
What do you mean?
Well, do you have the latkes before you sit down for brisket, or they're literally on the table at the
same time? No, it's the same time. Yeah. So, you know, I would say, all right, so because we're talking about brisket, we're talking about the best way to make it. We're going to get to this recipe we have in the December issue,
which apparently is not the best way.
I think it's probably pretty, it looks pretty good.
It's pretty good, but it's not Maxine's.
If you ask a nice Jewish boy who makes the best brisket, he's going to say his mother.
The first time I had brisket at a Jewish holiday dinner, it was my friend Andy Goldman who was cooking. Nice Jewish boy, Andy Goldman.
How old were you?
I was 24, maybe.
Wow.
And it was like a young kid holiday Jewish dinner. And he was making the brisket. And he was in a state of panic and despair, which is, from that point forward, what I thought everyone felt like when they made brisket. And the fear of it being dry was like overwhelming. And he was literally in a panic checking it. There was a lot of aluminum foil involved. There was ketchup and tomato. And I think it was like one of those kind of classic things where then you serve the brisket and then you tell everybody how bad it is before they have any.
It's what we do.
And that is like what brisket meant to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because it, and as we talk about in a minute about this recipe, it is one of the easiest things you can make. I mean, the return on investment is spectacularly high. It's not complicated. It just take some time.
Right. Like any, I mean, it's a braise, right? Yeah. So once you realize like, oh, the brisket, it's got this whole like, you know, thing that accompanies it, its whole like intimidation halo around the brisket. And then you realize we're braising beef here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about, first of all, what are we braising? What is brisket?
It's funny because brisket's such a big thing in the barbecue world.
Yes.
And it takes a very different cooking method. Brisket is a big muscle that is right underneath the chuck, I believe.
Okay.
In the shoulder area of your cow. So because it's over there and that's like a working muscle, it's one of those that's big and can be tough and has a lot of connective tissue, but also has a lot of fat. So it's like all the things you want for a braising cut.
I want to get a connective tissue t-shirt. and it's a whole brisket, and we're going to get to this in a second, is a big, hefty cut of meat.
In the teens.
Yes.
Yes.
So typically, one does not often buy a whole brisket because it can be divided into two parts. Yes.
Yeah, it's usually cut into the flat point and, sorry, the point end and the flat. What you want is the point. So just remember, the point is you want the point.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, and
so
why?
You remember that. It's fattier.
They kind of converge on an angle. These two ships come together and like fit together. The point is a little bit smaller and slimmer, but fattier. The flat is bigger and heftier, but leaner.
The size differential is not that major. The recipe that we give a range from 6 to 8 pounds. So your point end might be towards the lower end of that weight and your flat might be heavier. They're both good. And a lot of times you ask for the point and then that your butcher just is like, oh, no.
For those listeners who are not big braisers, when we say something has more fat in it, don't think that that means, oh, it's going to be tough to cut and it's going to be gristly or chewy. It's actually the opposite. As you said, the longer you cook it, that fat breaks down, just like with short ribs, for instance, and it gives you that unctuous mouthfeel and it's fall apart tender. And that's the reason you want the point end.
Yeah, and it's also flavor. Fat is flavor.
Yes,
and
exactly.
It carries flavor.
As long as you cook it long enough. Again, so brisket, which is interesting before we get to the sort of the Hanukkah treatment, but yeah, big in Texas in the barbecue world. Again, also very slowly cooked for a long time. But
and they
smoked.
Might do an entire brisket,
yes.
And then you'll have both of those textures when you cut into it, the flat and the point.
But that's also interesting for those listeners who did not catch our Aaron Franklin from Franklin's Barbecue podcast last year. He goes in depth about the sort of the art and science actually of smoking a whole brisket. And it was more complicated than I imagined. I'm like, don't you just throw it in there for 8 hours and have some beer and come back? And he's like, yeah, no.
No.
I mean, the moisture, the temperature, how far away from the heat, all those things. And then often when you go to a place like a Franklin barbecue, or if even like you go to a Katz's deli and you're getting pastrami or corned beef, which are seasoned versions of brisket, they'll ask you, do you want it fatty? Do you want it lean? The guys who are slicing it. And that's essentially asking, do you want the flat side or the point side?
And the point is, you want the point.
Okay, so let's talk about this recipe in the December issue of Bon Appetit. Actually, it's a December-January issue. So this is from Mamala's, I guess, new school Jewish deli up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's interesting because as I read this recipe, it's essentially Maxine Rappaport's recipe.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of technique and process,
mm-hmm.
but with some different sort of flavoring elements. Do you want to walk us through it? And I will comment.
Sure. I mean, I would say, as with a lot of cooking and classic dishes especially, whose dish is it really, right?
Well, I will say this. Maxine Rappaport's sweet and spicy brisket is actually Doris Feinsilber's.
Exactly.
Sweet and spicy
and
brisket.
Doris and got it from
somewhere else.
How far back do you want to go?
Yeah, very far. So let's talk about it. So you got the point end, 6 to 8 pounds. As with any braise, what's the most important thing you do first?
You have to brown the meat.
No.
Oh, yeah. You have to season
yes!
the meat. I already failed. I just want to tell people, like, listen, if you end up with the flat, do not go into a panic that you got the bad cut for the brisket. You're fine. You're going to be fine, just preferably. Adam, why don't you walk us through it? Season the meat.
And as I've said before, as my friend Mitchell Davis's mom once said, salt it like the road. This is a big, hefty cut of meat, a lot of connective tissue. Make it rain. Here they do a thing which is interesting. I've never done this before. You know, season it all over with 1/4 cup of Diamond Crystal, rubbing into the grain, and then wrap tightly in plastic.
Yeah.
And chill at least 3 hours and up to 3 days.
Yeah. I think when we pre-season meat like steaks or roast chicken and then we leave them uncovered in the refrigerator, mm-hmm. the reason that we're doing that is because we want either a crispy skin at the end, or we're looking to get that very seared hard crust on the outside of a steak. In this scenario, you do want it to brown, but you're not looking to dry out the surface of the meat because it's going to be a wet cooking method. So
good
I think
point.
That's why. And it also reminds me of what you would do if you were making gravlax or cured salmon.
Oh, yeah.
That you wrap it.
And you want that salt to penetrate.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be bad if it were kind of like tightly wrapped because it's just going to keep pushing, I think, the seasoning further into the grain.
All right, so you got that going for 3 hours. 3 days seems a little much to me.
But 3 days?
They said up to 3 days.
Up to?
I mean,
sure.
Yeah, you know. Hey, if you're if you're the plan ahead type, good for you.
As my mom says, who's it's kind of funny that she says this, but as my mom says, it wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt. All right. So then the next thing is like, all right, they call for schmaltz, which is chicken fat, which
sure
is nice, always flavorful. You want a big pot or roasting pan, and you're browning the meat, and vegetable oil is fine. You know,
sure.
If you have schmaltz, cool. Why not?
But not bacon fat. Probably no, be weird.
No. So yeah, so browning the meat, so you got it nicely seasoned. You want to tap it off so it is dry. I think this is such an important step because that caramelization is going to give it the really nice color. It's going to leave the crispy bits on the bottom of the pan, which you then are going to add the vegetables to. We get that in a minute. I do think the browning process, you can't rush it.
And
that happens a lot where you turn it up, like, I'm going to get a really cool crust on it. And it's like, no, that's just going to burn. And then the bottom of the pan is going to be blackened. You just put it on medium, do not put it any higher, and just let it go.
Yeah.
And
then you want some of the fat that's in the meat to start to render
yes.
during the browning because then it just makes everything go better.
Yeah. So
it's warming up the piece of meat, the fat's coming out, it's browning more.
Yeah, we say 7 to 10 minutes. I personally would go longer.
Yeah.
And I like to get all the edges. I'm putting it on side with my tongs and everything. Take it out of the pan.
And it's a funny long rectangular shape. So
yes.
you might need, you know, to it might be curled up on one mm-hmm. side where one corner is sort of like up the side of the pan. And so moving it around enough times so that everything gets action is important.
You know what I've done sometimes? Because it depends if you don't. And I think so much of cooking is improvising
yeah.
and responding to what's in front of you. I have made brisket before. The brisket itself is too big for the pan, so I just literally cut it in two.
I was going to ask about that.
I slice
yeah.
it against the grain and then yeah. brown it in two. And then when it's time to actually braise with the liquid, I kind of wedge it in there and one's a little bit on top of the other. And at that point, it's okay because it's, as we're going to get to in a minute, it's covered with liquid and the top is on and it's fine. But I don't know.
Do you feel like that changes the cooking time if they're in two smaller pieces?
Yeah, but you're not cooking it to like medium rare. You're cooking it so all the way through
right.
that it's just like at that point, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So, all right. So you want to get nicely brown, take it out of the pan, let it rest, and then you're throwing in a bunch of aromatics,
yeah.
as we call them.
Your classic stuff, right? There's celery. Carrot,
yeah,
onions.
I do, yeah. And like, you know, onions, carrots, yeah, celery, just chopped up.
Right.
Bam, you're caramelizing that essentially.
Right. In those rendered drippings,
yes.
as the onion and the carrot kind of release their own juices, that helps unstick the stuff from the pan. So you've got
and
stuff
as I'm doing
going.
That, sometimes I'll pour in a little water to scrape
sure.
up the crispy bits on the bottom and just to get it going.
Yeah, you don't want anything to get like too brown or dried out.
Yeah. You got throw in a little garlic, some thyme.
Now, up until Bailey, this
we're
point,
back to the Baileys.
Whatever, but I want to know is Max up to this point is Maxine's method similar?
Maxine's method is exactly the same at this point.
Does she pre-salt and everything?
Oh yeah, and even not for 3 days, but you know, salted. Even the bay leaves, which I of course ignore because
they're just not for
it's
you.
It's a sham.
It's not a sham.
It's a total sham.
They have a flavor.
No, they don't. They add nothing to the equation.
Oh my God.
So you're like, oh my God, I don't have bay leaves. Got to go buy bay leaves. No, you don't.
I'm going to go out and buy them, but I have no problem having them in the pantry and using them because they do impart a flavor.
It's like one of those old Italian cook sort of tales. Like, oh, put the cork in the pot with the,
no.
with the octopus.
True.
No, yeah, exactly. It's not true. We got the veg nicely caramelized. Then you nestle the brisket back in on top of that bed of veg. So
yes.
at this point, what Maxine does, also Doris Feinsilber,
mm.
and this recipe dates back to the 1960s. 1 14.5 ounce container of Heinz ketchup, a minced onion, and then what also Maxine will do, you've got the bottle of ketchup, and then you pour like a quarter cup or half a cup of water into the ketchup bottle and shake it up to get all the remnants out
Love
of there.
Love it. Great method.
Some garlic. And then she's got like dried mustard, a little bit of cayenne or paprika or something.
This is very barbecue saucy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then brown sugar.
Right.
So,
okay.
So you got the sweet, you got the little bit of spicy, you got the garlic and the onions, and then you're just pouring that all over that big, beautiful, brown, gorgeous hunk of meat, and the sauce kind of gets underneath it and on the sides. Put the top on,
yeah,
or wrap it in foil and stick that bad boy in the oven, like
yeah.
at 300. Now, the Mamalos guys, similar flavor profile, but different ingredients.
Yeah. So they're getting their liquid, tangy, sweet, a little sour from Manischewitz.
God bless him.
Which, you know, is funny when you see it, but it's actually good, probably or the best way to use Manischewitz. Did we have this conversation about Manischewitz? You were talking about, like, once the bottle's open, you enjoy coming home and just sipping on it here and there.
I didn't know.
I think that happened.
No. I said at Passover dinner.
Yeah.
When you're going around at a Passover, for those of you who have not been to Passover, there's four cups of wine throughout the Seder, the ceremonial meal, and you raise a cup and you say a blessing at various points in the Seder, and you take a sip. I enjoy those sips. I like Manischewitz. Like, it's, you know, it's sweet as Coca-Cola.
Right.
But it tastes good, and it has alcohol in it.
Do you put ice in it?
Huh. I have not tried that, but that does intrigue me. Dude, you know what would be nice is a Manischewitz spritz.
Yeah.
Hit it with some club soda and ice. They're using Manischewitz as the liquid, which, yeah, getting to Coca-Cola is similar, like when people do a Coca-Cola ham sort, yeah, of thing, you know, that same sort of deal.
It's very sweet. Yeah. It's a little sour. It's a liquid. It's going to impart flavor. I mean, it works.
Yeah, they call
it totally works.
For 1.5 cups, and you pour that all over, plus some chicken broth,
mm-hmm,
and you put the top on. Put it in the oven, and this is
now. Is their temperature the same? Theirs is a little lower, 250. Yeah,
that's low. I think Maxine calls for about 300, but you know, no, they're doing 275 at first for the first cook. I would just say this for anyone making brisket or any sort of big cut of braising meat: it's always better to go long than short. Take it out, put the meat aside. They like to strain the liquid to get rid of all those cooked out vegetable-y chunks.
Right.
You can then cook down that liquid to get it a little syrupy, which, yeah, is nice. So after the brisket is done,
ideally a day ahead or more.
Yeah, you cool the brisket in the liquid.
Yes.
Put it in the fridge. The next day you skim off all that solidified fat on top.
Should just like lift right off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's congealed and opaque. They then separate the meat from the liquid, strain out the chunks of veg.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a nice smooth sauce. You can reduce it a bit if you, mm-hmm, want. And then they combine the meat and the strained sauce together again.
To heat up.
At 250. So you're, right, not really cooking, we're just warming it.
And that's a good holding temperature too. Like
now,
you could just...
I would argue this.
Okay.
This is a... I don't know if this is Doris's technique or Maxine's technique.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. It could be a suggestion.
Yes.
It doesn't have,
yeah,
to be an argument.
But what I've always done, what I learned from them, is you've got that cold meat. You've got the sauce. I like to slice the meat as it's cold,
yeah,
against the grain. And then as I'm putting it back, like in the Pyrex dish or the roasting pan, I'll ladle a little sauce on the bottom, and then I'll start to sort of fan it out and pour the sauce over it. So as it heats up again, the sauce is getting into every single slice.
I fully endorse.
Because you point out sometimes if it is a dry brisket, if you cook too long or something, or if there's not enough fat, if you get the flat end and it's not as fatty, that sauce then infuses each,
yep,
slice with
it's
a ton of flavor.
Soak it up.
And so you bring it to the table, and again, it doesn't need to come piping hot.
No.
You can heat it up. You can leave it on the counter with the top with the foil on. Everyone sits down. Because the thing is, if you're doing this for Hanukkah, what needs to be hot?
The freaking latkes.
The freaking latkes.
Yeah.
And they're frying them to order, kind of. Or, you know, so that's a bit
are
more
you
complicated.
Going in batches with the latkes? I mean, how many burners are going?
Well,
that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, so you want the latkes hot, and we're going to get to that in the next segment. So the brisket, it can hang out for a while.
Right.
And it's actually, I like it better when it's not like steaming hot, you know? You want that sauce to sort of mellow a little bit, but you want it like warm to hot. And then the only thing I ask of you, eaters/listeners, is don't eat it all. Because you know what's almost as good, maybe if not even better? Leftover sandwiches the next day. I, as a kid, I would always look forward to going to school the next day with brisket, maybe a couple of slices of white bread, mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Throw some prepared horseradish on that.
Ooh, I would now. Yeah,
bingo, bango.
As an adult.
What is the table condiment of choice? Are you doctoring at this table with anything? Could you have some horseradish there?
I did not grow up with horseradish on the table. I would totally do that now because I do think you want that bit of spiciness to balance out the sweetness.
Yeah.
Of
and the
brisket
acidity,
and,
yeah,
and the fat and everything. So, yeah, I think some prepared horseradish would be a wise choice.
This was fun.
What's your buddy Goldman's name? What's his
Andy
name?
Andy Goldman.
Tell him to just chill out. Get the December issue.
I think he actually nailed it. It was just the deep, deep fear.
Yeah, I urge you listeners, if you haven't made brisket before, do it by the point end, season it well, brown it slowly, and just let it go in the oven. It's so good.
Where's Doris now?
Doris fine, so we're still in D.C.
Cool.
Yeah. So,
well, shout out to Doris.
She and Mike. All right. Well, we'll let them know. We'll send this cast to them. So thank you, Mamalas. Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Maxine and Doris.
See you soon.
All right, Missy, you and I just competed in a Facebook Live latke cook-off.
Yes, very friendly competition. Very
friendly. How do I say this? I did not win.
I think you won.
No, stop. The judges thought Missy's
latke. They're just being nice to me.
and being mean
and
to their
boss.
And
they work for you, yeah.
But so you and I had very different latkes. I thought they both turned out nicely.
Yeah.
If I may.
Yeah. I loved yours. I thought that schmaltz situation in there is took them.
Don't give away my secret.
Well, that's your secret. That's it. It's in the recipe.
It's in the recipe, and it's online. All right, so let's talk about latkes, which are this sort of must-have dish at this time of year on the Hanukkah table. We were recording this on December 6th. Hanukkah started last night, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, December 13th. In terms of from a chef's perspective, can you talk to me about like what makes latkes work? What are the essential components?
I mean, potatoes and onions are the two most essential. I think, you know, I grew up in a home where it was very simple latkes, potatoes, onion, salt, a little egg, and that's it. I, as a chef, always like to try and reinvent and enhance a little bit. So
yes,
that's where my recipe came from today. But I've also done very similar latkes to yours.
I'm basically making my mom's latkes, which
yes,
are probably like your mom's latkes.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, though. As a chef, you said you know it's your job to enhance. When do you know, at what point do you say, you know what, I'm just going to keep it really simple and really classic, and when do you feel like you need to zhuzh it up?
I think for competition with Adam Rappaport, you need to zhuzh it up a little. But I think, like, if I was making latkes at home, I'd probably make my mother's latkes. Like, that's comfort food to me. And I think there's always, you know, there's a brisket recipe, for instance, in my cookbook. And it's my mom's recipe enhanced just a little bit with my own kind of touches to make it a little better with herbs and chili flake and things that she doesn't necessarily always use, but the essence of it is still there.
Yeah, so I think with latkes over the years, I've picked up a few techniques that have enhanced the recipe, as you would say, that deviates a little bit from my mom's without reinventing the recipe. And I do think one thing that you and I both did during the competition, which is essential, is, all right, you're grating your potatoes and onions. I always think use a fair amount of onion to potatoes just because that's where a lot of that sweet flavor comes from,
yeah,
right? And you grated by hand.
Yes.
Because you're cool like that.
No, just because I don't know. I just never think about using food processors for that kind of thing.
So you
My mom uses a food processor.
So you weren't grating by hand just for camera?
No, not at all.
Just to show
off.
No,
of I just like it's a dumb thought process as I should have been like, get me a food processor.
Okay, so I use a food processor. I'm okay with that on the grater attachment. Grated the potato and onions. And then both of you and I, then what was the next thing we did with our mixture?
Eggs. Oh, squeezed. No, squeezed.
Squeezed. Talk to us about squeezing.
So potatoes and onions emit an enormous amount of water, and that water is going to make for a very soggy latke. Mm. So you have to get it really dry, so you squeeze out in a towel.
Yeah, like a dish, your basic
yeah,
sort of
dish
towel.
Yeah.
Put it in there and just wring
yes,
every last drop as you can.
Yes, we had different techniques, though. You did the double twist.
Yes.
I did the single twist.
And then, though, some people save the starchy potato water for later.
I used mine.
Explain
today.
That to me.
Well, like today, like I gave you guys a recipe. Your team measured the stuff. The egg yolks seemed a little smaller than the egg yolks. Oh, you know what? I used liquid egg yolk that I have in the restaurant when I developed this recipe.
What does that mean?
Like we buy pasteurized egg yolks because we use so many.
Oh.
We use so much egg yolk for pasta.
Interesting.
And we don't have use for the whites.
Yeah.
And they're also pasteurized, which is great. So I always have egg yolks around. So I estimated 2 egg yolks,
but
when I actually made the recipe, I was standing over a bowl pouring it in, and so they were a little drier than last time I made them, and so I took a little of the starchy water that we squeezed out and added it back a couple tablespoons back in.
Just to moisten the mixture.
Just to moisten it. It just seemed a little dry, just to get it to hold together a little bit better.
Okay, so for I'm just looking at we have this recipe on bonappetit.com, which I think might need some tweaking, but it's Adam and Maxine's famous latkes. 3 pounds russet potatoes, about 4 to 6 of them, 1 large Vidalia or yellow onion, 2 eggs. Then I'd use some fine, plain breadcrumbs, 1/4 cup, kosher salt, baking powder. Talk to me about baking powder. Why do I put that in there?
I don't know why you do.
Well, because you're a
chef.
Come on.
It lightens it.
It gives
bit.
It a little rise
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, a little air.
And then some pepper. So I do the onions and potatoes, squeeze them out, get them as dry as possible. And then in another bowl, I beat the eggs with these dry ingredients.
Oh, yeah. You made a whole batter. I just throw all the stuff in there and mix.
I just did what the recipe told me. Yeah, but I beat all that other stuff together and then mix that with the potatoes and onions. And I think one thing that you and I both did, and I think the home cook should always be mindful of this, is if the batter doesn't seem wet enough, and this is applicable to almost any recipe, like trust your instincts.
Yes.
You know, like mine felt a little dry, and I was like, these are not going to hold together.
But also make a tester.
Oh, with the tester pancake,
always
yes.
Make a tester one, because you should always taste for salt. It's the same as making like a meatball or sausage or whatever. You're making this giant batch of something, and once you start going, you can't go back. So you should always
Fry up that first one.
I always fry up one, taste it, and then reseason.
Yeah, see,
I reseasoned, and you told me they were too salty.
until I tasted mine, because I realized I left like a potato or two in the bowl that I didn't grate. But I did realize when I was kind of feeling it, it still didn't quite feel wet enough. So I beat another egg, mixed that in there. So it was sort of
yeah. Sometimes
together.
You also like squeeze more water than you did last time, or sometimes the potatoes drier
yes.
and has less starch or more sugar. Like potatoes are a living, breathing animal.
Yeah,
and they're not an animal, but you know what I mean. That potatoes are always different. It's why it's very hard to make French fries from scratch because potatoes change throughout the year. So you might have amazing potatoes at one time of the year. And then another time of the year, you can't get them crispy.
In places that do a lot of potatoes, they know like how long the potatoes have been sitting in cold storage for.
I think
and they know what their
I
sugar
think
ratio
they
is.
They definitely know what's yeah. going on. Yeah.
So, again, so I sort of adjusted. And then my other thing, which I picked up, is using half vegetable oil and half chicken fat, a.k.a. schmaltz. And that imparts a really nice flavor.
I mean, it tasted like a roasted chicken. You're like,
yes.
In a good way.
Yes.
In a very good way.
That is never a bad thing, tasted like a roasted chicken. Yeah.
I do sometimes half canola oil, vegetable oil, and half olive oil as well.
Mm.
I did not do that today, but I do like to get that olive oil in there, but olive oil burns too quickly.
Yes.
So if you're going to stand and fry latkes over a 45-minute period of time, you want both because it'll balance the heat.
All right. So I think a couple other points. All right. So my mixture, we know my mixture is potato, onions, and then some breadcrumbs and baking powder, eggs. You've got potato, onions, and then
I put a lot of stuff in them.
You got fancy on us.
I got a little fancy. I did lemon zest.
Which is nice.
A little bit of garlic.
Yes.
And I did a little bit of Parmigiano Reggiano.
Which is very fragrant as it's frying. I was like, ooh, that smells good. And so but I think what's interesting is, and I guess not interesting, but really important, that next step, I think the most important element of making good latkes is the frying. And A, you need enough oil in that pan, so they're sort of simmering away, and then it's got to be the right temperature.
Yes. I like a medium-high heat, where it's like not cooking too quickly, because you also have to get the potato cooked.
The inside.
So you have to, and mine were a little thicker than yours,
yeah.
and a little more cakey,
almost,
held together.
Almost crab cakey, if you will.
A little bit,
yes.
So you have to like make sure that your temperature's not too hot. And the oil, you saw me, I kept adding oil, like gradually, as it absorbed into the fry.
Yeah, I think, again, just as you might have to add another egg to your mixture, look at the pan, make sure there's enough oil in there. If not, add a little bit more. You know, we used nonstick skillet, which is okay. I think more of the oil stays in the pan than on a regular skillet.
Yeah.
Cast iron is great if you have a big cast iron pan.
Yes, and it's also the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Like, you get your nonstick functionality, and you get a little more ability to crisp.
Yeah, and also the nonstick, it does, the oil doesn't bead up in that weird way where it sometimes it pulls up in certain
in
portions
like one area,
of,
yeah.
of a nonstick. Yeah, temperature-wise, we were using these weird highfalutin sort of induction little cooktops, and we both had ours about 350, which I think is a good, that medium slash medium high, because if you go too high, it then the outside ends up burning and the inside doesn't get cooked
right. But if you go too low, you end up with soggy, oily latkes.
So I think you need that medium slash medium high. And you have to be patient. You just got to let it get crispy. It was interesting, the judges, who I'm going to have a few words with them after this.
Yes, they're fired. They're all fired. You all lost your jobs.
Packed your things. But they all had comments about how crispy and dark they wanted it. Which was crispier and darker than I thought they would want.
Then either of mine were not crispy, as crispy as I wanted them. They were like, when I cooked them, part of it, I think, was the nonstick, and part of it was the induction, kind of trying to figure out the right temperature.
Yeah.
But
you're blaming the equipment?
No, I'm blaming myself for not knowing the equipment. I requested nonstick pans because I think on camera it's a little more foolproof, but I definitely would have preferred to cook over flame.
When I see my gas, you can see how hot it is. You look, you're like, oh, the flame is this high or it's this high. I'm going to turn it down. And when you turn it down, it immediately goes that down. On an electric range, you turn it down, you're like, is it down to the point I want it yet? Or is it still cooling? It's very hard to tell. And I find it really annoying. But no, but the judges did say they liked the, I don't know if you want to say sear, but you had a darker sear on the outside that they appreciated, that flavor element.
I thought yours were crispier than mine.
Mine were crispier and lacier. Mine were not as tightly packed, but yours got darker color-wise. You know what I'm saying?
Different potatoes.
Well, you also
more sugar in Yukons.
You used Yukon Golds, yeah.
Yes,
and I used russet.
Which I don't always do either. Again, I was being fancy.
Okay, I think the question I get all the time, I was actually just talking to Carrie Paulus, our digital director here at BA, and she was about to host a latke holiday party for about 12 people. Can you cook ahead? If you do cook them ahead, what's the technique? Where do you fall on the make-ahead?
You can cook them ahead. I mean, you kind of have to a lot of times. Like, unless, like you said earlier, you're going to not be at your own party.
Yeah, you're a line cook, ultimately.
Exactly. So you can. I think you just have to keep a nice, like, 300 oven and reheat and keep them crispy. One layer, foil, pan.
I would, sorry, so this is
a little oil on the bottom of the pan.
Interesting.
You have to re-crisp them somehow.
My brother hosts a breakfast for Yom Kippur every year. He makes latkes. His thing, which I think he got from my mom, which I kind of approve of, I'm not sure. He makes them like a couple of days ahead and then freezes them on sheet trays, like maybe with wax paper or something, and then heats them up in a 350 degree oven or so on like a cooling rack set into a sheet tray.
Yeah.
So they're not sitting in their own oil. And it works pretty well.
My mom makes and freezes sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're all right. They're just, there's nothing like a latke right out of the pan.
No. It's like reheating a French fry. They're still like crispy, oily, potato-y, oniony.
But never the same.
It's not the same.
It's not.
But unless you, like I said, unless you hire someone to like make latkes for you at your party.
Would you like to hire me?
Yes.
Party.
But also, if you are making latkes at your house for a party, your house is going to smell like one giant vat of oil.
Yeah, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
Then you come home for 3 days and you've had a nice memory of your latkes.
Let's talk toppings.
Again, traditionally in the real world, I am a sour cream, creme fraiche kind of girl.
Okay.
I'm not an applesauce person.
At all.
I don't really, applesauce in general, I don't really like, and applesauce, I'm just a savory person more than sweet.
Yeah.
I went with whipped ricotta today to kind of go with the theme of my Italian-Jewish combo. But in general for a latke, I'm kind of a sour cream creme fraiche person.
The nice thing about sour cream and creme fraiche is that it's creamy, but there's also that tang.
Yeah, it cuts the fat a little bit.
My mom serves applesauce with hers, which I will indulge in now and then. I'm more of a sour cream guy. Weirdly, when as a kid growing up, we would just do sour cream and just sprinkle some sugar on top.
That I love.
And that was very tasty.
That's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah. And so it was just straight. It was a very kid thing to do. Do you ever get fancy and do like caviar or anything of yours? You like
yes,
that too?
Yes. I like caviar and anything.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I don't, but that's just me. You can have mine. Any final thoughts on latkes for the listener before we get to your lightning round?
I say, oh, lightning round.
Yeah, that's happening.
Wow, I love that. I'd say just go with your gut instincts and make what you want and honor your moms. I mean, you got to honor the moms.
Honor moms, and you got to be on top of it. You got to just, if you're frying, make sure the temperature right, the oil, you're doing, commit to it. As you're doing, you're maybe adding a little more oil, you're adjusting the temperature, you got to be on top of it.
Commit.
All right, so lightning round, and to remind the listener a bit of Missy's background, you grew up in Connecticut.
Yep.
You own a restaurant called Lilia.
I do.
Okay, so lightning round, are you ready?
Let's do it.
Ready. Pepe's or Sally's?
Sally's.
Wow, that just bam.
Oh, it's a thing, yeah.
Okay, what's your go-to order when you're there?
You're going to be surprised by this. No cheese.
Oh,
they do an incredible thing, which is sauce and garlic.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite thing in the world. I will be honest. I go to Modern the most now.
Okay.
I was there last Saturday, as a matter of fact. Modern has shorter waits. And in kindness to myself and to my family, I don't make anyone wait for 3 hours at Sally's.
Yeah.
I will always say Sally's because it's nostalgic and I love it. But I go to Modern 9.9 out of 10 times now.
And
Pepe's if I'm going to lunch because they're open.
Yeah. And you get a red pie at Modern or something different?
I get at Modern,
yeah.
I get the hot chili pepper and onion.
Ooh.
It's insane. And the calzone.
Whew.
The calzone is the best calzone I've ever had. And they have red sauce on the side. And it just warms my heart. Makes me so happy.
Kugel or Kasha?
Ooh, tough one.
Is it really?
Tough one. Kasha Varnishkas.
Really? Even though you just said
the way my mother makes it.
What? Which is how? She had the little bow tie.
Kasha,
pastas.
Bow ties, onions. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I grew up on it.
But Missy, let me ask you a question. What is the most popular recipe in your cookbook?
The cacio pepe kugel.
Yeah, which I imagine has got to be, I mean, how can that not be good?
I've now made it so many times in the last 3 months that I'm going with cacio.
So it's basically a baked cacio pepe pasta casserole.
Yeah, it's got ricotta, mascarpone, spaghetti, pepper, pecorino. Mm. That's it.
Throw it in the oven.
That's it. No
bam.
Eggs. It's actually it's really easy.
Katz's or Second Avenue?
Katz's.
Do you have a go-to order there?
Pastrami. Always.
Yeah. Northern Italy or Southern Italy?
You know.
I don't.
All of Italy.
No, that's not the
answer. I have spent more time in Northern Italy than Southern Italy. It's significant more time. I've been very few places in the South, yet I have found my food very Southern influenced in the last couple of years.
Mm.
So.
Do you think that's a byproduct of us as a food country community being a little bit more healthy minded and a little less buttery?
It's from me being more healthy minded for sure. I changed my whole diet and I became very focused on fish and vegetables and cooking with less fat and using more spice and all that
citrus
stuff.
So, and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's just kind of natural and everyone's like, oh, all your food is so Southern inspired. You must have been to Sicily 100 times, which I've actually never been to Sicily. I've studied Southern Italy a lot and it's on the agenda, but I've spent most of my time in Northern.
I was going to say applesauce or sour cream, but we already know that answer.
Sour cream. Done.
One big present or 8 small presents?
Ooh. One big guy.
Yeah, you know what? Me too. I'm like,
one big guy.
As a kid growing up, we always like 8 crazy nights of Hanukkah, and you're always like, this is, oh. Every night was, oh, it always felt like every night was a slight disappointment. You're like, oh, this is okay.
Your mother's going to be so upset. No, my family, when I was growing up, I thought did it cool. We got 8 really, really small guys.
Yeah.
And then one big one on the last night.
All right. Amaro or Manischewitz?
Grappa.
What about, I was saying, well, I maybe, you know, who knows, cacio pepe or carbonara?
Ooh, that is a very, very hard call. I eat cacio pepe a lot more, but when you get a good carbonara, there's nothing like it.
What's the trick to a good one if you're making it?
Off the heat, in a bowl, never in a pan, and pasta water balance.
So you take the hot pasta into the egg mixture?
With the hot pasta water. I learned when I lived in Italy, my first job when I was there, these two women taught me how to make carbonara. It had nothing to do with anything that was on the menu, but they taught me how to make it. And they made it in a bowl off the stove, and I've never forgotten it. It's become a little bit of a New Year's morning tradition.
Ooh, I like that. When you make it, do you use the egg yolks and whites or just the yolks?
Just yolks.
Just yolks.
Yolks. I do use Parm and Pecorino, which some people would fight. Yeah. Black pepper, guanciale, or pancetta. I've made it with bacon if that's all I have.
Still
good. But guanciale is the traditional.
Yeah.
But it's really the key to it is the pasta water, egg yolk tempering.
I'm doing that.
Ratio.
Do you have a preferred pasta shape?
Spaghetti, bucatini.
Something long.
Yeah. Oh, long.
Yeah.
Long
I'm
and not too long and not too thin because it
gets clumped up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. A whitefish salad or lox?
Oh, no whitefish salad.
No.
I don't do any mayonnaise-y salads. It's a rule of mine. Lox, please. Thank you.
Oh, this is going to be a tough one for you. Remember, you only get one of these for the rest of your life.
You didn't make that roll.
Yeah, I just did.
You just made
I just
a new
did.
Roll.
That just happened. Fresh pasta or dried pasta?
Wow. Yeah. You're going to be surprised by my answer.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dried.
Nice. More versatile, don't you think?
I will like to stand in a room for the rest of my life making fresh pasta. It's all I want to do. But I actually want to eat dried pasta. So I love making ravioli and agnolotti and all my filled pastas. But I prefer to eat, you know, an awesome rigatoni with red sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you. How about Parmigiano Reggiano or Buffalo Mozzarella?
Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yeah. It is the best cheese ever. But last question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I think I know. I probably know the answer to this, but being a Northern Italian gal, maybe not. butter or olive oil?
Olive oil.
Right?
Yeah. Olive oil. I use way more olive oil in my cooking than butter.
Mr. Robbins, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and produced and edited by Emma Wertzman. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys, with additional music by Nathaniel Wertzman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.